and welcome to Off the Books, where we're surfing the uncharted waters of accounting, finance, and wherever else the waves take us. I'm Drew Dubner, and I'm your host. I'm not an accountant, but I like asking questions of people who are finance professionals so they can do their jobs better. Today we have Steve Soder, Camille Rudy, and Ernest Nunciacion. Steve, what do you want to jump in and kind of tell a little bit about yourself?
Sure. I am a self-described accounting enthusiast and Diet Coke aficionado, and I'm looking forward to debiting good times and great information during our discussion today.
Hi, everybody. I'm Camille Rudy. I'm the National Director of the SEC and SOX Professionals Groups. I, too, am not an accountant, but I've had the pleasure of working with accountants for the last 10 years. I'm super excited to engage with all of you on this timely and very relevant topic.
And I'm Ernest Annunciacion, and better than an accountant, I am a former internal auditor. And so as the resident auditor expert, looking forward to today's topic.
Thanks, everyone. Kind of the subject today we have is about the PCAOB. And in the 2021 federal budget that was presented recently, that there's a bunch of information in there, and there's, you know, per usual with federal budgets, some things get proposed and may not end up seeing the light of day. And one of those things is kind of the folding into the folding the PCAOB into the SEC and getting rid of the PCAOB as we know it today. So I'm curious to you all, how would that impact the day-to-day life of, you know, of an accountant, of a risk professional?
I have to say, I really enjoyed reading Ernest's blog post on it. So Ernest, I think you ought to take the lead and kind of share your perspective.
Having been a former auditor myself and even working in public accounting, I think there are definitely two sides to this potential proposal. And I'm going to take the stance of why I personally believe that the PCAOB should not fold into the SEC. If we think about how the setup is already, it's inherently flawed because of a lack of segregation of duties, right? So the SEC actually oversees the PCAOB. They are the ones that are appointing the directors of the PCAOB. However, the responsibilities are clearly delineated in terms of what the SEC is responsible for versus what PCAOB is responsible for. And the PCAOB is there to audit the auditors, essentially. And so if we think about the inception of this regulatory body, it all stemmed from the things that were happening after the dot-com bubble burst and companies like Enron and Tyco and WorldCom who had come up with some very creative accounting standard, not standards, but, you know, ways to kind of cook their books. And so SOX, the Sarbanes-Oxley Act, was born in 2002, and thus the PCAOB with its advent. And their responsibility was to be the watchdogs over what these accounting firms are doing in terms of representing their clients' numbers. So given that fact right there, I think you still have to maintain some sort of independence when it comes to these regulatory bodies, because there's a downstream impact that could happen that have a number of tenants and people that are impacted. So, Drew, going back to your question, in terms of how this would impact day-to-day operations of risk professionals and accountants, depending on the nature of the company, I don't think it will change dramatically. But would we revert back to the wild, wild west and people being incentivized to do things that are in a potentially gray area, you know, being incentivized for the wrong things and then ultimately reporting out numbers that are not accurate, they're not timely, they're not complete, and they're not transparent ultimately to investors. And so that's another big stakeholder group that I think are going to be very impacted if this happens, is what happens to investor confidence if we were to essentially deregulate the audit industry.
Well, we know what happens when you deregulate the industry. We all saw it. I mean, I have to say, I particularly enjoyed reading this piece by Arthur Levitt, the former chairman of the SEC, when he says, abandoning the PCAOB would disrupt investors and markets. It would undermine confidence. And after all, the PCAOB is primarily funded through an accounting support fee where public companies and brokers support them. So there's not one investor organization to date that has ever called to abolish the PCAOB. And in current environmental, in current times right now, with this uncertainty that we're facing, it would not be prudent at all, in my opinion.
Yeah, and you're helping make my case there, Camille, and I appreciate the additional color commentary there, as well as data points as to why this is a bad idea. You know, when I think about the SEC, they're primarily comprised of lawyers and accountants. They're not auditors. They've never performed these inspections in the past, and the SEC only stepped in when there was a problem. I like to see the SEC kind of stay in their lane and be that capital markets regulator, and then the PCAOB be the regulators for the audit industry.
Let's just take a step back here for a second and be clear. I don't think what the budget is presenting effectively abolishes the PCAOB, nor does it, I think, undermine the independence. The SEC is already responsible for oversight of the PCAOB. So the fact that the PCAOB may potentially be rolled into the SEC, I don't think inherently changes independence. I think the other thing that we should point out is the PCAOB effective right now as a regulator? And you don't need to look very far in order to see spy novel-like intrigue and scandal that has erupted in the PCAOB all the way back to its first founding. In fact, its very first chairman, Chairman Webster, was in the job all of 3 weeks because they found out that he was on the audit committee of a company that was under investigation for accounting scandal. And those type of stories continue. In fact, in prepping for this discussion, I mean, I felt like I just went and, you know, again, read a spy novel of all of the intrigue that happened, primarily with KPMG. Now, do I think that that changes just as a result of the PCAOB being folded into the SEC? Maybe, maybe not. But there's not an accountant, an auditor, or anybody else in the world of finance who is not the most afraid of getting in trouble with the SEC. So while I think that the merits of both of these can be debated, if I'm to take the position that would be in favor of rolling this in, I do think there's some merits that we shouldn't look past.
So what about investor confidence? So like to me, the glory of SOX is to basically prevent Joe on the street from losing their 401k again to Enron Part Two. So, what does it mean for them?
Well, I think if you look at the aftermath of Enron, and by the way, you know, if you look at a lot of the things that Enron was doing that later received significant scrutiny, the SEC had actually pre-cleared much of it. So, I'm not sure that Sarbanes-Oxley, nor the PCAOB, nor increased scrutiny by the SEC would have prevented that. But if you were to take a step back and just look at what was happening at the time, yeah, additional regulations were needed. There's no question about that. And I don't think that this is a zero-sum game to say either the PCAOB's function exists today or it completely goes away if the budget gets passed. So I don't think to frame it up as a zero-sum game is not correct. And what I think it means is that if you're Joe Investor, likely the things that are functioning today within the PCAOB, the good parts of it probably don't change. So if I'm an investor, I don't know if I'm that concerned that all of a sudden auditing standards are going to go to pot and companies are now going to be able to get away with the crazy things that they did.
On the other hand, though, I could see where, as an investor myself, I would be wary of any numbers that I see are being reported. And it's not to say that we would fall back to the times of pre-SOX, where you had these companies that were doing some very creative things when it came to their accounting and the reporting of the numbers. However, it would just, again, give me a certain level of weariness in terms of, can I trust this information or not? If there's nobody else that's looking at it, and it's not to say that the SEC wouldn't be able to produce the same level of activity in terms of the inspections, but I just don't see how they can do that effectively without the experience, without the manpower that the PCAOB has right now. However, you know, again, does that shake the confidence of the investors? And are they willing to continue to flood the market with their investments, or are they going to pull out? I mean, I think time will tell. However, I definitely think it would have an impact economically as well as with the investors.
And I don't disagree with you, but I do think there's a more fundamental question that says, should investors assume that audit quality is high right now as a result of what's happening with the PCAOB? I mean, there are numerous instances of claims settled by the Big Four firms because of botched audits. And so if I take a step back and say, okay, how would this change? Well, I think I first need to baseline, how confident should we be in audit quality today? I think you can definitely say it's improved, but I don't know if it's as good as it should be.
I also wonder about the whole issue of why the penalties have been so modest, considering some of the, you know, egregious issues that the PCAOB has kind of failed to see with some of these audit firms.
Tell me a little bit more about that, Camille.
Well, I was really hoping Ernest or Steve could elaborate on it, but the bottom line is, from what I've read, there have been opportunities for the PCAOB to impose very strict and rigorous and expensive fines on the audit firms where there were failings, and the fees, the penalties were actually quite modest in the scheme of things. I mean, would you agree with that, Ernest?
Yeah, I mean, the evidence shows that, you know, the ceiling in which they can impose those fines and kind of the cap on that is, I don't know the number off the top of my head, but it's somewhere up into the billions. But when you look at the number of sanctions that have been enforced into the auditing firms, it's, you know, a small percentage of that capacity.
Well, I think there's a few things, you know, when you bring up Bear Stearns, you know, and even Lehman Brothers, I mean, it should be noted that the Big Four settled claims for failing to, you know, audit appropriately those firms. And so from that standpoint, yeah, there was a watchdog. I would say that from my experience in practice, when PCAOB promulgated audit standards, particularly with respect to like management review controls, you know, when those things kind of hit the scene, yeah, that caused a lot of extra work for us, some of which I don't think was particularly helpful or really improved things. But there was no question that audit quality was going to go up as a result. To me, when you say, you know, who's auditing the auditors, there is such an incestuous relationship between the PCAOB and the Big Four that I just wonder, how powerful can that oversight really be? And I mean, look, guys, what one name says it all, Brian Sweet. You don't have to look very far to look at this insane conflict of interest, illegal activities and unethical activities across the board of what happened with Brian and a host of other people. I mean, I'm enthralled by this, you know, story that I'm reading. Again, it reads like a Soviet era spy novel of, you know, Instagram posts indicating code words so that we can make phone calls using burner cell phones in our attempts to cover our tracks. I mean, you can't make this stuff up. And Damn. If I knew that I was going to be subject to potentially, you know, disciplinary action by the SEC because I was working for the SEC at the time, that just seems so much more fearful to me than this one degree of separation that I have between the SEC and the PCAOB.
So let me ask you then what your thoughts are in terms of the SEC's ability to create these auditing standards. So if I think about more recently, revenue recognition or changes to lease accounting, right, you know, instead of trying to fix the SEC and PCAOB, should we just be working on GAAP? Is that a bigger issue in the interpretation of how GAAP should be applied?
I think that's a great question. I think it's both. I mean, certainly there's some fixes in GAAP that were long overdue that we're now seeing, and you can debate the merits one way or the other. I think both leasing and RevRec have generally been positive things. But to me, I feel like that's outside the purview of the PCAOB. What the PCAOB really needs to be doing is auditing the auditors, as you said, and promulgating audit standards and audit quality that's going to give Joe Investor a level of comfort that when he or she sees that audit opinion, they know that that audit was conducted under the highest standards, and that there's been some inspection and some oversight of those auditors by an independent agency. So, and I guess to further build on that, if you think about the SEC being ultimately responsible for those accounting standards, does it not seem to create some inherent efficiencies that that oversight of the creation of those accounting standards is also the same agency that sees that has direct oversight and is directly responsible for the standards that are used to audit those accounting standards?
Today's episode of Off the Books is sponsored by Workiva. Workiva, since it has work in the name, was founded to transform the way that people work. A majority of senior accounting and finance professionals that we talk to say their financial reporting still involves lots of manual work. They share Excel documents, they share Word documents, and they all come back in all sorts of jarbled sense. Workiva is here to fix that by helping professionals like you modernize the way they work and connect their organization from record to report, from SEC team to SOX team to internal audit. Link those data elements together, the numbers, the narrative, the calculations at the heart of your reporting, everywhere you want to use them. When you change data at the source, it's changed at the destination. It's that simple. Visit Workiva.com today to learn what 75% of the Fortune 500 already know. So just a minute ago, we were talking about Brian Sweet, this guy from KPMG. Steve, can you get us up to speed there?
Well, I came across it. I mean, I knew about Brian Sweet and I knew about some other people. I mean, I'm reading these quotes about these like clandestine lunches and these, you know, flash drives that are being passed over. I mean, like, this is crazy crap. I mean, this is accountants behaving badly. No question. But the answer to your question, Ernest, that is the only way to defend it. You can only take this position by using the salaciousness, the scandalousness of.
Yeah, the most exactly. Outrageous of examples that you can come up with, but which, you know, those examples are few and far between, right? Like those are exceptions versus the rule, right? And so when I think about what the PCAOB has done, look, I agree. Could they be levying more fines? Yes. But is that the point of the PCAOB? No. The point of the PCAOB is to ensure that audit quality and that firms are being focused, hyper-focused on the quality of their controls within their audit practice, right? And so for me, it's one of those things where if it isn't broke, don't try to fix it, but how can you make it better? And I don't think folding the PCAOB into the SEC is the answer necessarily. I think there are things that the PCAOB could really stand to take a look in the mirror and say, how can we do our jobs better to prevent some of the things and the claims that these firms are willing to pay? Because to them, it's a drop in the bucket. So what if I screwed up on one of the auditor on one of my clients' audits? I'll pay a couple, you know, $10-20 million. When you're talking about these big four firms that are in the multi-billion-dollar industry of being the big four. And so what I feel like that does is create barriers to entry for even mid-sized firms to overtake the big four. I mean, let's not forget the big four used to be the big five. And when Arthur Andersen went
down. Excuse me, they used to be the big eight.
Well, the big eight.
Back before you were born.
I was going to say, Camille, maybe you're showing your age just a little bit, but I'm showing my age. Yeah. You know, when I was coming up, it was the big five and everybody was excited about it. And then, you know, the end of the 90s and early into the 2000s happened. And it's like, holy crap, that's the only way that you're going to take them down. And I got to think that in the interest of external audit firms, whether you're the big four or not, or if you're a mid-tier or if you're a small regional firm or whatever it is, having the PCAOB there actually works in your favor because you can say, my audit fees are this high because I have regulatory pressures from the PCAOB to be able to conduct more in-depth audits, more coverage around your controls.
Excuse for a second, because so, the cost of the PCAOB is offloaded onto businesses innately. Through, you know, what is the business tax fees? I'm sorry.
There's a PCAOB fee that all public companies have to pay, and you are prevented from filing your documents with the SEC unless you are current in your PCAOB fees. A terrific story would be at one public company I worked for, and we suddenly discovered that through a mistake in our AP department, we were not current in our PCAOB fees and nearly missed a filing deadline.
Great.
And man, that nothing will give you a heart attack than that, I can assure you.
For sure. And another thing to add here is that this is all hypothetical at this point.
Yeah, this is 100% speculation, right? We have no idea what's going to happen with it. And I guess if we're going to go, you know, far fetched here, to me, if the PCAOB does fold into the SEC, is that the first step into unraveling the SOX Act completely?
Well, you have to wonder what the administration is thinking with this initiative.
Well, the administration, because we're not here to get into political debate.
Regardless of how you feel about the administration or not, I was actually a little surprised that the Trump administration was even aware of the PCAOB's existence in all reality. So that seems like a very obscure thing for them to be focusing on in a budget, although I guess it was in an obscure location in the budget itself. That did seem odd to me.
Yeah, well, page 147 or something, Drew, right? Buried underneath all the other important stuff that there.
Well, you know, I mean, it's interesting that you say that, because if somebody was to ask me as somebody on the receiving end, and to be clear for everybody here, what happens is that I, as an accountant, am going to do my accounting for my company, but I know that's going to be subject to an audit. That audit is going to be performed by a firm who is registered and subject to the PCAOB and their inspections. And so what happens is that if the PCAOB ratchets up the standards, makes it harder, increases those audit standards, that means that my auditor is going to increase, their procedures on me, which is then going to make me more careful, more cognizant, because I obviously want to meet those audit standards. But what cost has been incurred relative to efficiency as an accounting professional? Because if I'm spending 50% or more of my time just trying to comply with auditing needs and auditing requests, rather than like recording numbers and providing context and explaining the story, I don't know if that's a good side effect of Sarbanes-Oxley to begin with. And then I would take a step back and say, okay, have we maybe gone a little bit too far? So do we need to dial it back a bit?
Maybe that's why the administration wants to put the SEC put the PCAOB as part of the SEC. It's a streamlining of regulatory bodies and increasing efficiency and reducing bureaucratic overload on all those poor businesses out there.
Well, I think that's probably the rosiest, most optimistic explanation for it. I will say this, and Ernest, I'd be curious what your take is on this. Is there a potential benefit to increased coordination between PCAOB inspections and a comment letter process or an enforcement action? So, you know, if the SEC identifies an issue of concern with a company, should that not then have a direct tie into, okay, well, hey, what about the auditors? And shouldn't they have identified this or caught it earlier? Not that financial statements are the auditor's responsibility, because they're not, but should there have been some kind of audit indication? Like, for example, if we see an issue and it was never listed as a critical audit matter, would that be a problem? And then do we need to kind of coordinate that effort in one single agency to really get at the source, both at the company as well as their auditor? I mean, what's your take on that?
Well, it's hard to guess on that, because that's not the way it's done today. The PCAOB is primarily comprised of former Big Four partners. And so I wonder where, again, going back to that notion in the beginning where I mentioned there's an inherent flaw with the segregation of duties between the SEC and the PCAOB, and the fact that the SEC oversees them and are appointing their directors, and those directors are coming from these public accounting firms who probably have the most knowledge around how I can creatively account for things and how I can become creative with my books and present, not maybe intentionally, but, you know, to an extent, falsifying information within my financial statements. So, I mean, it's this this indefinite loop that we get caught up into, I think, within this regulatory body and all the different parties, first through fifth line of defense that I just threw out there as caution into the wind. But, you know, the system itself is flawed.
And of all of the things that we can agree on, Ernest, I think you are spot on, because the reality is that you couldn't effectively oversee an auditor unless you were an auditor. You can't go create audit standards unless you have been in the trenches, you've performed audits, you understand what the pitfalls are and what the risks are. But then, of course, having come from that audit background, now if you were to, you know, go to the regulator side, of course you're going to have conflicts of interest, and of course you're going to have biases. And if you're unethical and opportunistic, then you're going to take that experience at the PCOB and go back into the firms and use that to their advantage, is what happened here. And unfortunately, there were significant financial incentives for people to do that. So, you know, then do you argue, well, then the PCOB needs to pay their employees more. They need to make it so lucrative that they never want to go work for somebody else. Well, that's probably not the way you resolve that either. So I think you've summarized it very, very well.
Well, and then, you know, if you were to do that, and if the PCOB were to pay their employees more or on par as to what partners are receiving, does that increase the fees to companies who are paying and funding the PCOB? Yeah. It's a vicious cycle that we end up in.
Vicious cycle.
Let's recap our conversation here. So we just spent the past 15, 20 minutes arguing about whether the PCAOB should exist anymore. I'd like each of you to summarize the conversation we had and your thoughts about it in three words. Noodle that for a moment. And Ernest.
Time will tell.
That's right.
You damn right that was good, Camille.
I can't compete with that. Ernest, I'm not going to allow you to make me look bad by you doing so good.
This is good.
Well, just do better then.
I've got one. Fast, furious, and fun.
Wasn't that Target's slogan for a while? Or was it fast, friendly, fun?
I don't know. It just, to me, we went fast, it was furious, it was fun.
Dave, yours could be Let It Burn.
I don't know.
There you go. Hey, pretty good.
I'll take it.
Yeah. There you go.
It's earnest, but what's interesting.
Why? Wise words from a former accountant.
Those three words saved my life so many times.
Yeah. That is definitely an acceptable answer.
So I think that probably puts a pin in the conversation for now. So Steve, Camille, Ernest, thanks so much for the discussion today. It was really great to hear what you have to say. And thanks to all the listeners out there. Hit that subscribe button and join us the next time on Off the Books. Surf's up. Thank you.